deep news reviews, commentary, not just another podcast.
Are the Ordinary Pickleball Broadcast.
Now here comes your host, Kyle Abear of the World Team.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 146, with all the geeky news you can use. We got tons of geeky stuff to talk about because we are part of thegeekmedia.com. And we also stream live every Thursday, at least most of the time, on Stickham, stickham.com/bigballbroadcast, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Coming at you from the West Coast, my name is Kyle Abear. I'm an anime and video game voice actor.
And your co-host of the East Coast and the World, Steve. I am a music mogul.
We have a very special announcement. We're very, very excited about something that is coming up. So you have to stay tuned to this show.
I'm going to squash any speculation right now. It's not Steve Bloom. I'm sorry. Kyle's still working on that. And at some point we will have Steve Bloom on. But we have a big guest announcement, but we're not going to mention it to the end of the show. So stick around.
We are talking about Geico firing a voice actor.
Oh my God.
He insulted people. He insulted stuff. Can you believe? Yeah, we have the actual voicemail that this voice actor left to a company that cost him his gig. James Bond, the new movie, is delayed indefinitely. Oh no. Oh no for 00. Star Wars films being prepped for Blu-ray coming sooner than later. OMG. Ford's Sync App Link brings Android and BlackBerry apps to your car. What does this mean? Is this going to like pretty much kill terrestrial radio? 7-Eleven stores to begin carrying used games at half of its U.S. stores. Facebook further reduces your control over personal information. Teen sues mom for hacking Facebook account. Left 4 Dead 2, new downloadable content, finally available at a price. All this plus your listener email and whatever the hell else we feel like talking about right here on the Big Ball Broadcast. Steve, sup?
Yo, homie, as Mark mentioned before we started, this is your first podcast post-Techo, and I got to bounce back to you real quick. What was your impression of Techo? What was it like having Mark and I, you know, slandering to your face as opposed to being 2,000 miles apart on a weekly basis?
It felt like home. It felt like family, man. That panel was so much fun. I hope you guys go to our website at thebigballbroadcast.com. And check out our lovely episode, which was just a few weeks ago. And I know there's video of it, but I don't know if it's ever going to... Is it going to end up on YouTube eventually?
There's some video up on YouTube now from the panel, from the Podcasting 101 panel. So okay. I know that was on the Facebook page. Do some searching over there, kids, on the Big Bar Broadcast on Facebook. And you'll find the video embedded there from a pretty cool panel about how to get into podcasting and... why the Big Bull Broadcast has, I guess, a little bit of success behind it. Enough to go to a couple cons already, so it's got some success behind it. So we get to talk for a bit about that. Me, Mark, and Kyle, the three of us. And hopefully soon Mark's going to have some footage up from the live stream, which we did on the Saturday night. So thanks, Mark, for taping all the stuff to further embarrass Kyle. Get the podcast out there and promoted.
Yes, lots of endless high fives to Mark for making this happen. He said basically a year ago that his goal was to get the show invited, not just, you know, me. I go to cons all the time, but to get to actually do the show from a con. We've actually done a couple before, but this is the first time we streamed it live as it happened. We had like at least 200 people watching us live, and we've got all the downloads since then of the audio portion of the show. But this was like a video stream as well, and I had a blast, and I know you did with your Pepsi, quote unquote.
That was great, and as one of my guests so eloquently stated, at least Pepsi kills all the germs in your mouth, so it's pretty safe to share.
Indeed. We want to give a shout out to several people. Our Facebook fan page recently hit 1,000 followers. This is a really, really nice milestone. 2010 is shaping up to be an awesome year for us here at the Big Ball Broadcast, and glad you guys are along here for the ride. We had a contest recently to toss out a super, super duper limited edition Big Ball Broadcast button. And I'm going to sign some postcards, and the following folks will receive this for getting people to not only check out the Big Ball Broadcast, but actually join up as a follower. So big high fives to Byron McIsaac, Samantha Farmer, Scott Abrams, Cameron Carlson, and the winner for most people invited and joined the Big Ball Broadcast Facebook page. Thanks to Dylan Parmeter. Big high five and standing ovation to everyone for doing your duty and spreading that grassroots, whatchamacallit, getting us out there. The best marketing, word of mouth, right? Using Facebook and building our legion of minions.
Yeah, Dylan's pretty OCD in a good way, though, because every time I went and hit the page, Dylan sent me. I was like, holy crap, this kid's motivated. So thanks, Dylan. You so rock.
We're going to send the buttons and the signed postcards out about mid to late June. Why? Because I will not be with Mark until Anime Next, where we'll be doing another podcast. Steve, unfortunately, will be busy being a dad for the second time. But I'm going to sign some postcards there, and we're going to get that stuff in the mail to you. You should have it by the end of June, conservatively, I guess, by early July, I think. So thanks to everyone. If you want to keep on spreading the word to your friends and family to join our Facebook page, please do so. We're not going to stop you. We like the whoring that's going on because we are whores.
We have to make up for doing this podcast for free every week somehow. So we shamelessly plug everything we're involved with because I want you guys to know about it. I want you to participate in it. I want you to buy it. So we don't really make too many bones about that. Show your support. Show your support in other ways.
That's right. We do have a PayPal donation link. You can click on that and donate your $4.95 and roll over. And actually, we got someone who's done that. And he's going to lead off our email segment here. If you want to drop us a line, send us some feedback, send us some leads on some geeky news, send it to mail@thebigballbroadcast.com. Let's open up the inbox now and start off with K2 the Ninja, who I believe has donated several times to our show. Thank you very much, K2. He says, "Hey, Kyle, Otherworld Steve, and Mark the Engineer. I'm a longtime listener and fan of the BBB and member of Kyle's fan club, the Squinty Fried Squids." Oh, by the way, K2, I kind of dissolved that a few months ago. But anyway, that's another story for another time. "Just asking if Kyle and Steve could help promote Montana's first anime convention, SugokuCon, June 25th through 27th, with a shout-out on the BBB." Hey, looks like I just did. "So I'm going to try and set up a panel at the convention for getting MP3 comments and shout-outs for the BBB at the con, as well as do a lot of whoring for the BBB, EBE records, and other related stuff, like whoring the Risen Bull Rangers, promote buying anime rather than illegal downloading. Since the convention has no guest yet and only three vendors, I'm doing my part to make it the best con possible. Thanks for your time, and now for a question. Do any of you guys plan on seeing the A-Team or any other rip-off clone movies of it, The Expendables and The Losers? It seems to me that just like the dreaded gimmick of 3D, Hollywood has run out of ideas," well, that's nothing new, "and trying to rehash a standard elite team of soldiers that get crossed and seek revenge story. Well, that's all for now. Thanks again for the awesome sauciness of the BBB and for helping out a struggling Montana anime convention. No problem, K2. Once again, SugokuCon, June 25th through 27th in Montana."
I have no interest in any of the stuff that's being rehashed. It doesn't matter if it's the stuff that's done in the comedic vein, like Dukes of Hazzard, Miami Vice, or the stuff that's taking a bit more seriously, like here with the A-Team in some Clash of the Titans recently. You know, I just waiting for Hollywood to still wake up one day and say, "We have an original idea. We're going to put this out." I keep going back to The Matrix because The Matrix was just such a breath of fresh air and such a stagnant sea of film. And I'm waiting for that next Matrix. What's going to be the next thing that's going to really permeate into pop culture and really be kick-ass and mind-expanding at the same time? I guess kick-ass is doing really well, and I really, really, really want to see it. I just haven't had a chance to get out to a theater yet and check it out. But that's something I will go see theatrically because I truly dig the premise. I haven't read the comic, but I totally dig the premise for that. But rather to go on and on about my music, I wanted to just say about their music, I'm sorry, or their films. I wanted to say thank you so much for being so willing to whore us about at this con coming up. I think I can speak for Mark and Kyle as well. And we say thank you from the bottom of our hearts. It's so kick-ass to have a grassroots fan out there who's going to do the groundwork for us. So maybe if the con's successful, you can get us invited out there for next year.
Amen. Now, as far as the movies, A-Team, The Losers, Expendables, yeah, they kind of look interchangeable. I was first excited about The Expendables. That was what I first heard about. And I am interested in seeing because it's got all the big action heroes of the 80s together in one movie. Of course, one of the newer ones too, like Jason Statham. But we're talking old school. Sly Stallone, Bruce Willis, Arnold's in there. You got everybody.
Right. Now I got to jump in real quick and say, you know what already turned me off to this flick? The first trailer. It is so slow. It's not your typical like 80s action flick. You know, the badass from those times all culminated together, and it's such a slow trailer. It like brought me to tears. Like, when is something cool gonna happen? And the cool isn't even like cool. It felt so Beavis and Butthead, you know, like, when's it gonna start rocking?
Well, that is the big misdirect, I guess, of trailers. We've often seen trailers that hook you and say, oh my God, it's so awesome. And then you see the movie and you're let down. They put like the best stuff in the trailers. Hopefully this is a case of, all right, maybe it wasn't edited together great. And maybe we will get a really kick-ass balls to the wall 80s style action flick. I would love to see a return to that stuff, because I'm a big Jason Statham fan. I'll admit it. Crank and Crank High Voltage are some of my favorite movies of the past few years. And yet they're mindless video game stupid action movies, but I love them. So that one I am most interested in checking out. The Losers, maybe, because it is based on a Vertigo DC comic. But A-Team, man, I never watched the TV show. I have no interest in that. And I know that Zether and Random Checkers in our chat tonight said they won't see it just because Mr. T's not in it. I don't think even Mr. T would make me want to see the A-Team.
Mr. T would make me want to see the A-Team. Mr. T, I don't know how you escaped it, Kyle. He was just such an icon for the 80s. And you seem to have embraced everything else, but for some reason their deflector shields were up, because Mr. T was just the shit. And he's still around. He's still kicking. He still looks like he's in halfway decent shape. If they could have negotiated to get him in the film to tie that nostalgia together, I probably would have found that an easier pill to swallow. But with this new cast and new take on it, where at least the TV series was self-aware. They knew they were camp. It's very serious undertones with this. And yeah, it's not for me.
Well, speaking of camp, wasn't that show from Glenn Larson? I don't know. Glenn Larson did like Knight Rider and Battlestar Galactica. And, you know, he's like kind of the king of 80s camp. I don't know. Again, because I never saw it. But, you know, Liam Neeson in there. And I don't know, man. We'll see. But yeah, you brought up Kick-Ass. I also have not seen Kick-Ass. And I want to see Kick-Ass, especially because Roger Ebert hates it. He says it's so anti everything good in the world.
He gave it a one. I don't remember the last time I saw Ebert dropping a one on, which ironically enough is, as far as I know, the number one film over the weekend. So I guess it just goes to show you everybody has an opinion. And you know, we talked about this at Techco, about the Big One broadcast, about how we can have these differing opinions, and we don't take offense to it. It's more educating the people that are tuning in live and listening to posts that, yeah, you know, opinions vary. You find what you like and you go ahead and embrace it. Don't let anybody else tell you otherwise.
Indeedy loo, yes. Hero 004, that's fun to say it again with me. Hero 004 says, hey guys, just in case you want to squeeze this in, Chris Evans from Fantastic Four and Not Another Teen Movie is playing Steve Rogers / Captain America. Peace, see you in the chat. It's funny that he chose Chris Evans credits, Fantastic Four and Not Another Teen Movie, instead of like, oh gosh, he's in Sunshine, which is an underrated sci-fi movie. He is also in The Losers. He is, I never saw Not Another Teen Movie. But anyway, Chris Evans as Captain America. I have heard this. I have also heard that he didn't even audition for the part. And it's really odd that this actor, Chris Evans, who, from what I can tell, is very, very good at what he does and everything, but he's already played a Marvel superhero. So I'm wondering, you know, you had two Fantastic Four movies, and they did okay, not great. And now they're going to give him another role. That's kind of an interesting thing going on. It's up there with the big, you know, Ryan Reynolds doing Deadpool and Green Lantern, you know, from opposing comic book companies.
Which I still find incredibly weird. But as far as the whole Captain America news, I believe it's been like confirmed multiple times. So we are getting the Human Torch as Steve Rogers in the Avengers movie. And I guess they're kind of saying, well, you know, you got to admit, if you watch the first two Fantastic Four movies, he was kind of like the best thing in there. So you might as well take that and capitalize on that. But it's definitely weird. And I don't know if the audience cares or if just the fanboys care. I don't know if somebody can go to a movie about Captain America and his origins and accept him as Captain America, or if you're going to have the cultural stigma of, well, he's the Human Torch, where it becomes a huger issue, of course, when you talk about Deadpool, because as you mentioned, it's competing companies. It's pretty weird to have somebody be a Marvel and be a DC and have and come out around the same time and have the audience accept that and dismiss that they just saw him in another film. Now, I will say, Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, you know, on the Star Wars Empire Strikes Back release calendar, so I thought Harrison Ford did a great job of really distinguishing those characters, where Han Solo was Han Solo and Indiana Jones was Indiana Jones, and you didn't have that pullover where you're getting pulled out of the moment going, oh, well, he was just recently and blah, blah, blah. So he did it really well. I don't know if Reynolds could really bring that to the plate, and I don't want to jinx him on it, but I don't know. To me, it just seems like way too much confusion.
I've mentioned on previous podcasts, and I think you did as well, I don't know if you're really a Captain America fan or not. I'm more excited about hearing the possibility, at least, that Joss Whedon will be directing the live-action Avengers movie. This would be a perfect fit, since he is such a character-driven director. He can handle a cast that has, you know, so many people. So this seems like a perfect fit. Plus, Joss Whedon has critically acclaimed comic book runs with X-Men and some other things, and of course the Serenity Firefly comic spinoffs. I'm pretty excited about that.
I'm not a Joss Whedon fan. I can't speak to his directorial prowess. I can't get excited about it. I've seen a lot of mixed emotion online about it, particularly like some of the bigger news sites in their comments, where it seems very 50-50. Half the people are just incredibly ecstatic about it, and half the people are ready to jump off, you know, a rooftop because of it. I think, and as we've beaten to death before, you have Marvel under the House of Mouse right now. This is going to be a big budget movie with people, I think anyway, paying very particular attention to the details as to not really piss off the fanboys, because that word of mouth really helps, particularly with a big summer blockbuster. You want people to get really excited. So no matter what direction they go in and who they're casting and who's directing, I'm pretty sure they're making all the right choices.
Yes, indeed. This next email comes from Golden Panther 587, who's sitting in our chat right now. What's up, Golden Panther? He says, 3D porn, your thoughts? Also, how do you think they'll make the Bleach movie? Live action or 3D like Avatar? How's that for filler? Lol. 3D porn, yeah, there's money to be made. Why not?
I'll say this. The porn industry is already hoping this is going to be their savior, because porn is just so prolific across the internet. It's impossible to make money on it. It's not going to happen. Why people pay for porn is beyond me. So they're saying, well, if we're doing this new format where you really can't torrent it, you need certain hardware, certain software, if we could bring a more visceral experience to those who enjoy it, maybe this could be something we can latch on to for a little while, kind of milk the industry. Oh, that was horrible. but to keep the industry alive a little bit longer by kind of latching on to a more exclusive format, much like I've said, Sony with the PS3. The reason you see a lot of people torrenting PS3 stuff is because Blu-ray is such a proprietary format right now. The media is not even available. You can't go to Best Buy and buy a stack of Blu-ray discs and burn PS3 games, so I don't know. Looking at it that way, maybe it can eke out some wildlife from the porn industry.
Yeah, because high def porn, I don't think is saving that industry again. Because yeah, like you said, why would anyone pay for porn when you can just do a Google search? You can find anything. And I've gone into like the Hustler store out here in Hollywood. Yeah, I know, I'm a perv. Whatever. I see the prices of these things. A Blu-ray disc is at least $50. This is not a mainstream movie like, you know, Transformers or something that would actually warrant seeing something in 1080p. This is like Blu-ray porn. Oh, special edition, blah, 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 with a fancy package. It's $50 at least. I don't see anyone dropping that kind of money unless they're just wiping their ass in dollar bills. So, yeah, 3D porn. If you're going to go out there and have to augment your home entertainment system with a 3D TV or 3D this, that, and the other, then they're going to latch on to anything because there's no money to be made anymore online, really. The Bleach movie, live action, I've heard that Viz, you know, the live action division is obviously pulling for a live action. I don't know if they're going to go for 3D, because I think Hollywood and anyone who pays attention to Twitter, Facebook, and reads blogs can see that mainstream people are kind of fed up with 3D already.
Not just that. It's that unfortunate aspect that anime is incredibly niche, and you're not going to pump the money into making something 3D where, let's face it, anime hasn't had a great theatrical track record to begin with. I can count on one hand all the anime that have ever come out theatrically in the U.S. So you're still looking at a DVD Blu-ray release. It's not going to be anything too spectacular. It's not going to be IMAX 3D or anything. You know, it's not going to be anything amazing. And I don't know, anytime I hear live-action movie, I keep thinking, whatever happened to Evangelion? Wasn't that supposed to come out like 2 decades ago? Mm-hmm. All right, I exaggerated, but you know, you got One Attached, it's a big deal. What happened? Akira, I've been talking about that for years. The thing is moving ahead, but no new news. No script, no director, no cast, no nothing. So, I don't know. Anytime I hear anime other than in its televised anime format, I've automatically got my doubts.
Yep.
Although, all right, I have one caveat. I kind of have to apologize. I didn't see a Trigun movie coming, and I'm kind of really excited about it. So, I guess sometimes miracles do happen.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, over in Japan, there's more anime that pops out that people go raise an eyebrow, go, really? More? I think there's a new Code Geass that got greenlit. There's more Ghost in the Shell coming. I think there's a live action Ghost in the Shell in development too. And it's like, no, I just don't see it working. It's animated for a reason, people. Ah,
you know, here's a great conspiracy theory. Dragon Ball Evolution sucks so bad, so Hollywood would be soured on the prospect of bringing the genre to the big screen. Discuss.
If people that already had a preconceived negative notion about anime waltzed in and watched Dragon Ball Evolution, there's no way you'll ever get them, even at gunpoint, to watch an anime anything. It's like, I'm not watching that shit. No way. No thanks.
Yeah, because you had Speed Racer too, and it didn't help the cause any.
Yeah, completely wacky. Next email is short and sweet. Sage says, I really love your show, even though this is the first episode I've heard. Keep it up. See? Short and sweet. Awesome. Thank you, Sage.
Thanks, Sage.
I keep on running into people that will message me on Facebook and stuff saying, I'm a new fan. I love the Big Ball Broadcast. And I'm in the midst of listening to every single episode. And it always just confounds me because our news is very topical and time sensitive. I don't know why anyone would want to do that. I said, you know, you could listen just like the past couple and be okay, really, because I don't think I could listen to episode one and keep a straight face.
I tried to just a few weeks ago, and yeah, that was rough. And it stayed rough for a while, and we're still feeling things out 5 years later. So that's how we roll, bitches.
Totes my goats. All right, final email. Akil George writes, after hearing how you guys at the Big Ball Broadcast were excited to see Kick-Ass, I was wondering what your thoughts and opinions were of it for those who had seen it. While I've already seen on Facebook that Mark felt that Kick-Ass sadly underwhelmed, I'd like to hear more of what you guys thought about the film. Well, again, Akil, we haven't seen it yet, so we can't really comment on that. He says, among the group of friends I went to see the film with, most of them liked the film as well. Some had said it was one of the best comic book movies they had seen. I did have a friend, however, that thought the film paled in comparison to Watchmen. I personally enjoyed the film and enjoyed the comedy as well as the action. While some things were changed from the comics, such as the violence being toned down and some of the parts of the story being changed, I found the film to be entertaining. Another bit of interesting news I heard about was the next installment of Men in Black. The third film will be titled Men in Black 3D. Just as the name implies, the film will be the next to jump on the bandwagon and will be shot in 3D. Kick-Ass. Yes, it's on my to-do list. I want to see it theatrically. I don't know when I'll be able to do that because I've just been too busy lately. Comparing it to Watchmen, apples and oranges, my friend. I don't know. I mean, this looks like more a parody or a satirization of comic book movies. So I don't know that you can really play on that. But again, we had mentioned, you know, Roger Ebert just kind of tearing it apart for being so against the morals of America. And this is so terrible and this, that, and the other. I saw, you know, read a really long review by Harry Knowles from AintItCool.com saying, you know, I'm your friend, Roger, but God, you are wrong. You know, you grew up in the 50s where kids went around, you know, playing cowboys and Indians or playing soldiers, you know, killing each other with guns and all that. It's just a different day and age now.
While that's true, I mean, I like to think of myself as not that old, but I'm a couple years younger than Kyle. But anyway, when I saw the first Red Band trailer featuring Hit Girl, and I heard the language that was coming out of her mouth, and knowing this wasn't done in post, this wasn't voice doubled, this is audio they got on set of her dropping F-bombs and using the C-word while being portrayed as an 11-year-old girl, to me, I even found it shocking. I'm not going to say offensive, but I did find it shocking. My jaw did hit the floor, and then I burst out laughing. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this little kid is using that language. And that kind of sums up the issue that Ebert had with the film and a lot of the naysayers. It's just, if you are easily butthurt, this isn't the film for you. And I think the words already get out on that. If you can go in with an open mind, realize it's just a film. It's 2 hours of entertainment. It's not going to change the world. You'll be all right. But if you're easily butthurt, if that kind of stuff is going to go up your ass sideways like a cactus, then avoid it. And then we can avoid your shitty opinion of it.
And if you're a parent, you know, the biggest glaring sign is the movie is called Kick Ass. All right. It's rated R. Don't bring your little kids and then bitch about what a terrible influence this is on your children. If you can't afford a babysitter, don't go. Wait for the movie to come out on Blu-ray or DVD or whatever. Oh, But as far as Men in Black goes, I don't really care. I actually really, really thoroughly enjoyed the first movie. And the second one was a total misfire. At this point, no. Doing it in 3D, no. That's about as interesting as an I Am Legend prequel. And I loved I Am Legend. Come on, Will Smith. Do some other stuff. Don't do the Hancock sequel either. Come on.
The big issue at hand is I'm reading that, you know, originally it was supposed to be with Will Smith training a new recruit to take Kay's place. But I'm reading news last couple of days that Tommy Lee Jones has signed on too, and it's the whole 3D thing. So you can capitalize on the 3D. There's enough hype, and I've talked about it with Avatar, the inflated ticket price, which is certainly more revenue for Hollywood, where you can entice somebody to come in and do something that is probably going to be, you know, loosely dripping diarrhea on a stick, but money talks. You know, I'm not throwing it under the bus, Kyle. I know sometimes I get really unfair and I say really mean and horrible things to you. But I'm just going to ask you a very serious, straightforward question. You're a voice actor. At the end of the day, do you care about the integrity of the properties you're working on? Or do you say, that's a nice paycheck? Because that's what Tommy Lee Jones is doing. So it's kind of tough to chastise him for it because you know his motivation. His motivation is cha-ching, even though everybody else is groaning and shaking their head.
Yeah. And I could say that about all the actors on Dragon Ball Evolution. You can sit there and tear apart the performance and the acting and all that, but you know, at the end of the day, he got paid for it. What did you get for it? Nothing. You spent money on it and got ripped off. Yeah, and I tell people that who come up to my face at conventions, it's actually happened, and they'll say something like, oh, Gohan sucks. And my reaction was, I still got paid. So yeah, I understand. A point well taken, Steve. I understand. It's a paycheck. It happened to many an actor that I thought it wouldn't happen to. Jim Carrey made a sequel to Ace Ventura, and he regretted it, but he sure took that payday, didn't he? It's happened many other times when you thought, okay, they're never going to do this. Oh, they're just phoning it in. You know, Jason Lee, come on. He's most famously known as for, you know, My Name is Earl, all the Kevin Smith movies. What does he do? 2 Chipmunk movies. But you know what? Those were hits, and they made lots of money. So he probably made even more bank than just taking the regular old payday.
And for those who didn't know, Kirby Morrow, who is a very well-established Canadian voice actor, he's in Mighty Ducks 2, actually, you know, live action. He plays one of the douchebags on the opposing hockey team, and that is just a pleasure. I will hunt that video down just to keep watching that scene over and over again. but it's a paycheck. You know, if you really want to laugh your ass off, sometimes go over to YouTube and look at some of the overseas commercials that really big name celebrities do because the pay is, you know, pretty good. So it's the Arnold Schwarzenegger and Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt and everybody doing these Japanese commercials hawking stuff. They don't even know what the hell it is, but they're popularity selling this stuff. And it's like, yeah, money talks, definitely.
It does. Like, you know, Bruce Willis on the new Gorillaz music video. You think Bruce Willis gives two shits about the Gorillaz?
Well, see, I don't know. I don't know. I can argue that, you know, he might have that artistic integrity. He might think, you know, that's a great fusion. You know, he could be like a huge Gorillaz fan. For what they went for with the video, it works because it really played up to everything he's personified as an actor for, the action hero and stuff. I hope they had that concept before like pulling him in, if they did that just to monopolize on him and made him the factor of the video. But I like what they did with the CG, with the characters and everything. It was just a very well done video. And I hope there weren't really any sinister intentions involved. Nah, we'll throw you this much money if you do this.
Well, yeah, and there are cases where sometimes the actors will come out and actually say, don't waste your money. Zether in the chat says, Bill Cosby told people not to see Leonard Part 6. And, you know, I'm sure that was a nice payday for Bill Cosby, but whatever.
I guess the only person left with integrity now is Bill Murray, who's still being a little whiny bitch, considering, according to people behind the scenes for Ghostbusters 3, and he keeps saying, kill me in the first act. I don't want to keep going through this. I don't want to keep slopping along in these franchises that I feel are, you know, I've passed on from. So he's like, I'll do it. I will satisfy everybody. We will reunite the original cast. Just kill me off like in the first reel, please. And I'm kind of hip to him saying that. He's saying, I really don't feel like doing it. He's just being honest about it. He's not going through the motions for the paycheck. He's saying, no, this is all that. It's passe.
Well, yeah, he's still collecting residual checks from Caddyshack and the original Ghostbusters and, you know, getting that nice pull from Zombieland, I guess. Oh,
and you know,
spoiler?
No. Well, I hope not, because I was going to comment on it anyway. I just saw it recently, and Mark and I talked about it, I think, during the last podcast, but you weren't here. I recently saw Zombieland. I went into it very cold, and that was awesome. It was unexpected. It was humorous. It took up enough time in the reel for them to, you know, expand it out to a feature film. But it was very well done. And it was the last person I expected to see in this movie, because it was relatively low budget. Shortly after that, I saw an interview on CNN with him, which is fairly recent, and he kind of got a little upset because the reporters, the interviewer said, you're kind of the B-movie go-to guy now. And he's like, well, you know, let me justify that. I want to be involved in projects I find interesting. I don't care who's producing, I don't care who's directing, I don't care what studio's handling it, I really don't care how much money's involved. If it seems like a really cool concept, I'll lend my support to it. So again, I have to applaud him for probably being one of the very few people in Hollywood with that type of integrity.
Yeah, crazy, crazy go nuts. Well, that concludes our email segment. If you have something to say about the show, questions, comments, suggestions, a link to a story, you can send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at thebigballbroadcast.com, especially if you're feeling brave and want to record an MP3 comment. Why is everyone avoiding their microphones? Come on, people, record yourself. We like playing audio. Speaking of audio, we have some audio to play because a voice actor left a voicemail and got him fired from his gig. We're going to talk about that coming up, as well as Star Wars coming to Blu-ray, South Park in hot water from a Muslim group, downloadable content for Left 4 Dead 2, free for the PC, not so much for Xbox users. All this and more. We have so much news, and the show is we're already like 40 minutes into the show. How can this be? I don't know, but I do know that we are much cooler than CSI. So stay tuned to the Big Bald Broadcast.
I need a PC as beefy as a slaughterhouse, that looks as slick as a baby seal, and it had better run to the end of days!
What do you got?
In a weird fashion, you just described the very motto of Nexus Systems. And for that, we have this!
I think I just crapped my pants.
Nexus Systems Incorporated provides the best computing solutions for all types. From business to personal and everything in between, Nexus Systems has exactly what you're looking for. What are you looking for? Go to NexusSystemsInc.com and decide for yourself. Performance, reliability, style. Nexus Systems.
She's calm.
There are a couple of other things I'll just tell you when I remember.
He's crazy.
If you could not see the similarities in the personalities within like the first couple of episodes, You need brain surgery. I mean, seriously.
Can two people get together and record a podcast without driving each other crazy?
Slap.
Ow, you don't have to hit me so hard.
It wasn't that hard.
Find out on Anime Jam Sessions with your hosts, DJ Ranma S and Kudo Usagi. Log on to djranmas.net/animejam or look up Anime Jam Sessions on iTunes.
Weebertainment Weekly, the greatest podcast you'll ever find, starring Tombstone and Zach Jenkins.
Sure, there are better ones out there, but not starring them.
This is Tombstone from Weebertainment Weekly, and this is the opportunity for me to shamelessly promote my program.
You mean our program, right?
Yes, Zach Jenkins, I mean our program. You are technically the host.
Since you've taken over being the spokesman for our program, why don't you tell them what we have?
On Weebertainment Weekly, you'll hear the best in entertainment and media news, as well as my favorite section, Talk Nerdy to Me, where I make fun of guys like Zach Jenkins, who wish their girlfriends looked like anime characters.
Your mom. Join us every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 on WeberFM.org, or you can join us on our podcast at WeberTainmentWeekly.blogspot.com or on iTunes under WeberTainment Weekly.
Hi, I'm Richard Epcar, and you're listening to the Big Bald Broadcast. Lucky.
Big Bald Broadcast, episode 146, all the geeky news you can use. Kyle Hebert, Otherworld Steve, and so much geeky news. Where do we begin?
You know where we got to begin. We got to begin with this phenomenal story of, I guess, relatively prominent voice actor losing his job for being a douche with audio.
Yeah, complete with audio, which we have. I'm going to read this, actually. I know, Steve, you sent me a link. I have a similar link from Voice Actors in the News, which is voiceactors.wordpress.com, a great blog from Craig Crumpton. And this is called FreedomWorks Bullies Geico to Axe Voiceover Actor Umai. Without the Umai part, I added that. But it said, Geico voiceover actor targeted by Tea Party members after expressing opinion on FreedomWorks voicemail. LA voice actor DC Douglas said he was dropped from the upcoming Geico Shocking News campaign after a group of Tea Party members harassed him and the insurance giant over a private voicemail the actor left for FreedomWorks. Matt Kibbe, president and CEO of FreedomWorks, posted Mr. Douglas' cell phone number in a blog post on biggovernment.com, instructing readers to feel free to contact him, call his employer too, and let him know that you are now in the market for car insurance. The next day, Geico held auditions to replace Mr. Douglas's voice on the campaign. So what was this voicemail? What did it say from DC Douglas? We have it for you right now, and it goes a little something like this.
Hi there, I'm doing a paper about FreedomWorks, and I was wondering if somebody could give me a call back. I'm wrapping up, and I just have one more piece of information I need to get from you guys. I just need to know what the percentages of people that are mentally retarded who work for the organization and are members of it. So if you could give me a call back at 398, that would be great. Just need to know the percentage of people that are mentally retarded who are working for FreedomWorks and are following it. And one final thing also, wondering what your plans are, how to spin it when one of your members does actually kill somebody. Wondering how, if you've got an actual PR spinning routine planned for that, or are you just going to take it when it happens? Just curious. So give me a call when you get a chance. Thanks so much.
Wow. Okay. So Mr. DC Douglas there that you just heard, that was his actual audio, the voicemail that he left that cost him his job with voicing over for Geico. And he says, quote, I called as a private citizen to make a complaint. Racism and homophobia are my Achilles heel. But unfortunately, my message included inappropriate words, and I am sorry for that. However, telling their members to harass my employer to get me fired is an egregiously disproportionate response to my actions. Unquote. Mr. Douglas believes his connection to Geico, a company already on FreedomWorks boycott list for pulling their ads from Glenn Beck's show, is the main reason he was targeted so forcefully. OMG. So how the firing of a voiceover actor constitutes a Tea Party success remains a mystery, as Douglas points out. Quote, it seems to me that they're more about the politics of destruction than they are about affecting positive change for the country. I do want to make one thing clear. I don't blame Geico for protecting themselves. They have a business to run and can't waste time getting caught up in FreedomWorks circus. And they've been very good to me in the past. Mr. Douglas consulted with several LA attorneys and has been advised that FreedomWorks actions were questionable, Though he's not planning on spending money to sue the organization, he's open to any attorneys taking on his case pro bono. He says, quote, "We can't let these kind of tactics become the norm in our country. If we do, then anyone can lose their job just for voicing an opinion," unquote. And Mr. Douglas won't be silenced. He has posted his personal take on the events on his blog, which you can read for yourself at dcdouglasblog.com. What do I walk away from this thinking? Keep your mouth shut, I guess.
Well, it's really not keep your mouth shut. And, you know, it's a topic that comes up relatively frequently. It's okay to speak your mind as long as you're not being a douche. I mean, there were so many ways he could have controlled that dialogue. But he could have been a lot more respectful in the matter. You can still voice your discontent, but voice it intellectually. When you're coming out and you're saying a bunch of mentally retarded people are working for your organization and it's just a matter of time before somebody kills somebody and how are you going to spin that, you automatically understand Geico's position. If Geico didn't do something about it, the repercussions, the boycotts, it's very damaging to such a large corporation. I have to liken it to Ben Roethlisberger with the whole rape allegation. I know you have no idea, Kyle, because you're not a sports fan. The NFL suspended him for 6 games, and a lot of people are crying foul, and it's like, this is the second time you've been accused of doing naughty things, and we kind of have to put our foot down. You may not agree with what we're doing, but it's what an organization has to do to save face. So, you know, and he admits so much, saying, I understand my Geico did it. They can't, you know, pull sides like that. No, when tensions run very high in the political arena. So he doesn't have much of a comeback, even if he tried to pursue it legally. It's his words. His words are pretty damaging. So it's kind of hard to say that, you know, oh, you should give me your job back. You're still going to see a huge backlash.
Yeah. And it's interesting because he did use strong terminology that would be offensive to some people. Say, hey, retarded, and someone's going to be killed, blah, blah, blah. But he sounded so calm and controlled and you know, like friendly, almost happy about it. It's like, I'm just wondering. So just give me a call. Thanks. So he had time to gather his thoughts and obviously leave this voicemail. And now I'm sure he's practically kicking himself. I mean, not on the basis of what he wanted to express, but the way he expressed it.
Yeah, you're a private citizen. Yeah, you have a right to have an opinion, but your employer, in most cases, you're employed at will. They don't have to call you back. You're not guaranteed the work.
I don't follow politics enough. I don't even know what the Tea Party stuff is about. I don't know what Freedom Works is. This is all news to me, other than voice actor loses gig. Oh, shit.
And that's what made the news. You know, again, it's sensationalism, it's politics, it's juicy, it's retribution. It's everything a journalist could ask for and more. That it's been plastered everywhere. I remember what I was going to say. The other huge issue is don't leave your phone number on a voicemail. That's controversial because, you know, not only do they post it in a blog, but I pulled the audio that you guys just heard a few minutes ago from a YouTube video of the unedited clip, and it has his phone number on there. And I just think it is a double-sided douchebaggery. Okay, this guy called and left a nasty message. What did you do in return? Encouraged everybody in America to call this guy and harass him. It's just like that story we talked about a few weeks ago about the judge in an RIAA case posting the infringed files on his website. It's the same thing, if not worse. So it's kind of a shame there isn't a repercussion on this political organization for doing that, because not only did he get fired, but they actually like really damaged this guy. 007 producer Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli of EON Productions announced today that they have suspended development on the next James Bond film, previously scheduled for release 2011-2012. They say, quote, "Due to the continuing uncertainty surrounding the future of MGM and the failure to close the sale of the studio, we have suspended development on Bond 23 indefinitely. We do not know when development will resume and do not have a date for the release of Bond 23. Eon Production has produced 22 Bond films since 1962. In 1995, Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli took over the 007 franchise from Robert C. Chubby Broccoli, and are responsible for producing some of the most successful Bond films ever, including Casino Royale and more recently Quantum of Solace. The James Bond franchise is the longest running film. The James Bond franchise is the longest running in film history. EM Productions and their affiliate companies are in control of all worldwide merchandising for James Bond. And it's kind of funny because we talked about the trouble MGM was in, and we talked about some of the properties associated with MGM, and I thought, okay, it's probably going to be an on-the-cheap deal. It's not going to be another Disney buying Marvel. It's going to be something I'm sure the studio wouldn't be really happy with, but if you can set up with your creditors, they take the money and run. And when they're not even meeting those numbers, it just blows my mind. Who wouldn't want to see more James Bond movies? Who wouldn't want to hopefully one day get a really good RoboCop series out there? But I don't know. This could be probably not the end of James Bond, because I'm sure there's backup plans where you can sell the rights and blah, blah, blah. But the studio as a whole, it doesn't look too good if you can't even find a buyer for this.
Well, the Quantum of Solace, you know, it came out and it was kind of met with indifference. You know, after the home run of Casino Royale and just rebooting the franchise with, but I thought Casino Royale was great. I didn't see Quantum of Solace, but you know, my excitement level went down, and a lot of people pretty much across the board said, eh, it's pretty much a sequel to Casino Royale, but it didn't bring people in as much. The franchise, it's been going on since the 60s. It's, you know, it's old school. It still has its hardcore fans, of course, but, you know, maybe it's just time to hang that little that hat up.
It's a thing like The Simpsons, you know, 20 seasons in, who's really still watching it? So, you know, I guess you could kind of say the thing with Blind, you know, 23 films. I thought the Friday the 13th franchise went on forever. This is, you know, 23 in. It's admirable, and it's also milking that same teat. It's going to be so chaffed by now. It's like, okay, time to let it go. Put the ointment on it. Let it sink in. So, I don't know. After hearing your argument for it, maybe it's a good thing that this deal didn't go through, because maybe it'll take some time before there's a reboot. When there's really quick reboots, I get nervous, because taking Raimi and Maguire and done Soft Spider-Man and announcing this reboot, I'm afraid it's just so rushed. I don't know really what's going to come of it. And maybe it's the best that it doesn't happen with the Bond franchise. Let it really sink in and give some people some time to play with it. And then when they come out with it, they know they're going to have to, you know, really bring their best foot forward. So it's hoping for that anyways.
Let a couple of generations pass. Let some people grow up, you know, then they can come back and reboot stuff. Yeah, exactly. I think this is a bad move to reboot Spider-Man when the original, or the Sam Raimi one, is what, a decade old at most. I mean, the kids who saw that are now grown up. They're going, wait a minute, why don't you just continue? You could totally make up for that third film. You don't have to just start over.
Because it works so well for Batman. You know, that's kind of the justification there. Look what happens when they rebooted Batman and they took it very seriously and it made a bajillion dollars. They're hoping for the same for Spider-Man, but it's like, you have nowhere near the prep time. Can you really do it? You got the money. I've already previously established that. You can put your money where your mouth is, but will it be quality entertainment?
That is a big question. Now, studios such as Universal are putting money where their mouth is as far as Blu-ray and DVDs are concerned, with the invention, or the reintroduction, rather, of flipper discs. These were first introduced, I remember, when the whole HD war was going on between Blu-ray and HD DVD. So Universal put out these combo packs, which you'd get a DVD copy along with a high-def copy, meant, you know, to kind of transition consumers between the high-def version and the old-school DVD players, which, of course, is still the dominant home video format. But now, let's see, the first three films to ship on a twin-sided Blu-ray DVD disc are not the classics you might expect. We're getting Out of Africa, the 25th anniversary edition, Traffic, and The Jackal. Wow, really? All coming out next week, actually, April 27th. And in a single package, users will get a Blu-ray of the copy as well as a DVD copy on a single disc. Better still, bonus features won't be going away to make room, as all three titles will have BD Live, added scenes, and all of the additional bonus content you can expect. We suspect that this is just the beginning for these flipper discs, that a ton of future Universal releases will be shipped in this format. Real question is, why did it take so long to get here? There's a fair chance that many consumers would have bought into BD earlier had these flipper discs been readily available. Going from one standard to another is made all that much easier with something like this on the shelves. And that is a good point. I think you would have greater market penetration if Blu-rays came with, you know, and many titles do. For example, I picked up the completely featureless Avatar today. It is two disc, but one disc is the Blu-ray. The other disc is regular DVD. Now, for me, because I already have a Blu-ray player, I'm not worried about transitioning and whatnot. I'm not going, it's not like I have a regular DVD player and thinking about one day, I have a PS3, it still works great, and yeah, I'm a sheep, because I know the Avatar with the special features is coming by year's end. But that's me. Universal, they're a lot like in choosing these movies, as opposed to some real blockbusters, like, let's go out with the, you know, like, Back to the Future trilogy, or there's a million classics, and I can't think of any of them right now, but that Universal has in their catalog that they could totally bring in the DVD generation in on and slowly transition them.
Well, you got to look at it from the corporate perspective. And the first is, making flipper discs isn't really doing anybody any favors. What the corporations are looking at is, it's so cost saving. You go from two discs to one. Not only are you using less materials, but the load is lighter. It's so much cheaper to ship all over the country. This is a great move there, because for a while now, we've had those two discs in the package, and a lot of what I picked up recently, I picked up Ponyo from Disney, from Miyazaki, and that's a Blu-ray DVD combo. I like that because of my living situation. I'm always going to find a reason to nitpick, but my Blu-ray player is downstairs. My DVD players are upstairs. So I like having a DVD upstairs for if Jonathan wants to watch like Ponyo or whatever, I can come downstairs and I can watch it in HD on my PS3. So I like having the options. When I have it on one disc, then it's a physical transition. I got to bring it upstairs, bring it downstairs, whatever, whatever. So for me, it's a little inconvenient, but I understand why they're doing it. And it certainly eliminates the marketplace confusion that we had when you had DVD, HD, DVD, and Blu-ray on the shelf. There was so much confusion. It was ridiculous. Now it doesn't matter if you're supporting DVD or you've made the jump over to Blu-ray. You have everything you need in your hands, and it's probably going to be like $10 cheaper. So it's a win-win for everybody, and I'm still going to find something to nitpick about it.
Well, the thing I could nitpick about is the price point, which is not listed here. If they're going to charge $10 more, say, because you are getting two formats on one disc, then I see it shooting itself in the foot and not really working. But if you could keep the same price point, then maybe that would work. Maybe, you know, say $20-$25 for, I mean, these are catalog titles. These aren't new releases. So they'll really probably be cheaper priced anyway.
Yeah, I really think you're going to see them cheaper priced just for the market acceptance. I think the reason why they're putting out three crappy titles is you kind of got to test the waters with something rather than, you know, present even more confusion with a two disc and a flipper disc and blah, blah, blah. Let's introduce the concept of flipper disc to the mass market with these lower rate titles. And I think it's just more for recognition. Yeah, it's going to be confusing if you start putting the top releases out in that format, because people, oh, do I buy this? Do I just buy the DVD? Do I just buy the Blu-ray? And so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as far as Blu-ray is concerned, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. George Lucas has gone on record by saying, you know, I'm waiting for Blu-ray. That's what I want to put my films out on. And we could be seeing it sooner than later, right?
You know, it's really funny because I had somebody catch me a name the other day and break this news to me. I said, no, you know, we've been hearing this for generations that Lucas is finally going to give everybody what they've been clamoring for. Well, I'll tell you what we got first, and then we'll take it from there. This actually comes from Steve Swanset at the C2E2 conference this past weekend, saying that something he and Lucas and company have been working on for years now. And his quote, courtesy of the Blu-ray blog, is, "We have been at work for a couple years working on, I won't call it the ultimate set because we keep finding stuff, but a very full set of all six movies on Blu-ray with lots of extra material. We're finding all kinds of scenes from dailies that have never been seen before. Beyond all of those things that you know about, there are some neat treasures."
So the treasures you can actually see on YouTube, right? Do you remember the name of that documentary with all that cut stuff that has never been available on DVD?
I don't remember the name of it, but that is an incredible, incredible channel on YouTube where this guy has put together these awesome, I can't even explain it, can't put it into words, and hopefully if I can find the link, we can sneak it into the show notes. I, you know, my geek star went off immediately. It's like, holy crap, it's finally everything we've wanted. We've wanted some of this stuff that's just been in closets and warehouses for years, and we've gleaned, you know, an image here in a magazine or a few moments that were cut on YouTube or whatever. And now they're saying, and we got even more stuff that's never been seen before that we're pulling out of the archives. That's great. It's wonderful. It gets me excited. It gets my heart racing. But then I pause for a moment and say, but this isn't it. This can't be it, you know? We were joking last week about Funimation just constantly releasing all these versions of Dragon Ball Z. And yeah, it's their cash cow. It's what keeps them afloat. They're going to keep doing it until people stop buying it. And with the track record they have, people haven't stopped buying it. And Lucas is certainly notorious for that. He probably invented that, where we're going to keep, as I said earlier, going back to that teat. No matter how dry and chaffed it is, we're going to keep saying, but wait, there's more, and this is better, and this is why. The first thing that already has me very wary of it is I know it's going to be the special editions. Will it have the original theatrical cuts on it? They don't talk about that yet. So I'm already kind of wary. The other content, the other lost footage, is it going to be integrated into the film? Nah, probably not. It's probably going to be a bunch of extras shown outside of the continuity. So as excited as I want to get about this, I've been burned so many times going to that well. I don't know if I can stick my fingers back in it again.
I truly think that we're going to see the same thing we saw on DVD. He's going to put the special editions out first, if anything, in terms of old school. And then that'll be probably featureless. And then he'll, a couple of years later, put them out again, special editions with more features. And then finally he'll cave and put the originals unremastered on Blu-ray, just like he did on DVD, just to shut the fans the hell up. But even that, you know, yeah, he's just going to keep on going with talks of, you know, Clone Wars is continuing. We're going to get another animated series aimed at even younger children. We got a live action series in the works. We got 3D versions of the old school trilogy. Star Wars oversaturated ever so slightly.
It's like, yeah, we get it. You know, Star Wars is huge. Star Wars is part permanently of our pop culture. We get it. It can stop now, really. It's okay.
It really is. It really, really is. Let's move on to another story here. Ford's Sync App Link brings Android and BlackBerry apps to your car. Yes, not iPhone, but Android and BlackBerry. So see, look, other phones and other operating systems can enjoy this too. Ford is releasing Sync App Link. It's a downloadable software upgrade for Ford Sync systems. It will allow hands-free voice control of popular apps for BlackBerry and Android smartphones. The first car to get Sync App Link support will be the 2011 Fiesta, available later this summer. And Ford announced this new evolution of their Sync system called My Ford Touch. When it was announced, it said it would support third-party mobile apps for a seamless connected experience. We got companies such as Pandora, Stitcher, and OpenBeak, that are sync-enabled mobile apps that will be available. BlackBerry and Android users can access and control their apps using their voice and in-dash car controls, rather than having to connect a phone to an inline jack and fumbling with the phone while keeping an eye on the road. Ford is launching a new mobile application developer network so that Android and BlackBerry developers can build in sync support for their applications, as opposed to in sync with Justin Timberlake. Anyway, the possibilities for this sort of integration are tremendous. Just imagine the potential of leveraging a geolocation app with an in-dash navigation system. Ooh, ah. What I come away with from this article from Mashable.com is I see Pandora listed. Pandora, of course, a very, very popular streaming music app and website. It's on smartphones. It's online. We've already kind of seen the death knell to terrestrial radio. As it is, we've seen the death knell to satellite radio. I mean, people aren't going to pay for this content, even if it is uncensored, because you have this little thing called the internet, and that has trumped all. So if you're going to have Wi-Fi in your car, you're going to have streaming music things that you can, you're going to have all of this stuff, constant connectivity to the internet in your vehicle, then this just spells, this is nails in the coffin for terrestrial radio. And that's my viewpoint, because I came from radio.
And you already know where I'm going to go with this. Do you find it peculiar at all that we're talking about Android and BlackBerry and not iPhone integration? I don't say it to be a prick. I say it because it's just one of the things that really knocked me out of my chair. I was like, wow, really? Android and BlackBerry? This is Ford Motor. Okay, recently the automotive industry hasn't really been calling the right shots, government bailout and all. But in all seriousness, when you're talking about a company like Ford, especially after facing some tough financial times, and they really have to make every dollar count now, what does it mean when, again, we're talking about Android and BlackBerry and not the iPhone?
You know, maybe Ford has some animosity towards Steve Jobs. Who knows? I mean, kind of like Adobe and Apple will never see eye to eye. You know, Adobe is just, you know, pulled the this week have just said, all right, screw the iPhone. We're not going to develop anything else on that platform because Steve Jobs ain't budging. And yeah, you know, so BlackBerry and Android, that's obviously the two other big players in the mobile marketplace. And it doesn't shock me at all, really. You know, you're going to see exclusivity. You're going to see, you know, big companies taking pot shots at others. And, you know, in the end, it kind of does screw over consumers because, you know, what if you want iPhone connectivity and you want to drive a Ford? Well, then you're shit out of luck, right? You have to have iPhone. I mean, you have to have Android or BlackBerry. Yeah, well, okay, well, we'll stick iPhone connectivity in Chevy. Well, what if you don't want to drive a Chevy? So, I hate exclusivity. I hate that shit.
I certainly see your point, and I certainly do believe your point is valid, but I'm still wondering if Ford is just predicting future market saturation. The one thing I've said that Android has over Apple is you've got your one phone on your one carrier, and I know that's going to be changing soon, but you have one phone on one carrier, and it's incredibly proprietary. Then you have an install base like Android that's on at least a dozen phones right now, with different carriers, and it's out there. It's going on different portable devices. It's going on tablets. It's going on netbooks. You were talking about the exclusivity and how it's a bad thing. Well, that's how I look at Apple, being so exclusive to a lot of what they're doing. You have a phone with an OS that's out there that's just gaining so much of the marketplace. There's going to be a tipping point, and I think you're going to see that tipping point where the Android platform and the BlackBerry platform are just going to be a lot more accessible to the masses. It's not really a status thing or a chic thing. It's productible. You can use it in a Forge. Yeah. Talk about, you know, integrating your technology.
I wish, and I know this won't happen, but I want to see connectivity between all the platforms, all the mobile platforms, but maybe Apple refused. Maybe Ford did go to Apple and said, you know what? We want to work with you. And Apple said, no, screw you. We don't need you. We're Apple. And maybe this is their retaliation launch. Is that, okay, well, screw you. We're going to go with Android and BlackBerry. Now, while they're competing against each other, we're still going to make it to where, you know, we can reach the rest of the install base.
I don't know. I still have to question why Ford would make that kind of call. And if there was a reach out to Apple for their participation in this, could be a Steve Jobs, oh no, you know, you guys are in bed with Flash, so I don't know. I'm really curious now, though. I want to know.
In the end, I do think it hurts segments of the consumer base when you get that. I mean, I get your point about exclusivity and closed system. Apple is very much that. It's a pain in the ass. Open system, you know, there's downsides to that too. I mean, people could upload viruses and spyware and malware, and, you know, you're completely vulnerable to that. Whereas a closed system requiring approval at least would nip that in the bud, but it's not a perfect system by any means either. It's, you know, it's like monopoly. We want to own everything. We want to control everything. I'm not for that either. I just love the operating system as it is. And I have no doubt that Android and even BlackBerry, you know, I mean, they have they're devoted fans to the bitter end.
All right, let's talk about 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven, the international convenience store chain, is making another large step into the used game market by announcing a program to sell value-priced used games in half of its U.S.-based stores. While 7-Eleven's U.S. locations have been selling new games for over a year now, the convenience store chain has yet to attempt challenging GameStop's dominance of the used game market. That is set to change later this year as the company will institute a used game sales program at half of its 6,000-plus U.S. stores. 7-Eleven will be teaming up with a company called Game Trading Technologies, Inc. in order to procure their stock of used games. 7-Eleven will only carry games selling for $20 or less, which should stand in a stark contrast to the new releases that 7-Eleven sells, much of which retail for $50 to $60. While information about what types of under $20 games will be sold has not yet been disclosed, but you can get a good sense of the price Game Trading Technology Inc. places on its games by visiting the company's official used game website, Gamers Factory. I don't particularly have an issue with that. I kind of think it's that consumer saturation that you want to get to. It's why Redbox, for the most part, is in grocery stores. You have to go there anyway. Why not pick up a movie? It's brilliant. That's why they're making gobs and gobs of money. Used games at 7-Eleven? Well, you know, we can pick on gamers if you like. They got to go somewhere to get their Cheetos and slushies. So if you're going there anyway to stock up for your gaming event, why not buy your games there? I don't see an issue with that. What I do see an issue with is what the publishers are complaining about big e-tailers and retailers like GameStop saying, you're reselling our stuff and we're not seeing a cut of that. That's kind of messed up. You know, you're making all profit on our product. And it is a very gray area. Because I guess technically the person who goes in and trades it in either gets cash or some kind of trade compensation, so somebody's still getting something out of it. And if you legitimize that, then you have a problem with people selling stuff on eBay, with the used book industry, blah, blah, blah. So it's a little gray, but again, I go back to my original argument. Really, where can you go wrong? You're going to have the geeks starting out of 7-Eleven anyway. If you want to pick up a game for under $20, and if it appeals to you, I don't see why you lose.
Yeah, if you're going to a 7-Eleven to buy a Slurpee, you don't have $60. I remember a few years ago, they did stock new copies of Halo 3 and, you know, whatever. You could get those top-name titles right there. But they just sat there, just gathering dust. You know, people probably thought, you know, I want to get it at GameStop where I can at least trade in games.
They do, I guess, have a hoard of games. What are the quality of the games going to be like? It's probably going to be some pretty undesirable stuff, but you know, I've talked about it before where we had so many great games that came out piggybacked over the winter into the spring. There's a lot of stuff I missed. So if these were really hot games and people went out and bought them in droves, then the resale value has to be pretty cheap because the market's pretty saturated with them. So I get excited when I can walk in and pick up, you know, Assassin's Creed 2 for $2. I mean, for $20. I really can't complain about that. $20 to a $60 game. So if I start seeing titles like that at 7-Eleven, I certainly got no position to crank on them at that point.
I live out here in Burbank in L.A., and I do see they've already started to stock the shelves with these used titles. And it does catch my eye until I start going through them. And like you say, man, the quality of titles, not so good. So if they really are trying to get those gamer geeks that are going there and buying gamer fuel and stocking up on slushy and energy drinks and this, that, and the other, they can't just get games, period. They really need to kind of look at sales figures or marketing figures or something to realize that it's like you can't just put a video game up there and expect it to sell. How many crap titles are there on every console that just sit there and you couldn't even give them away?
Well, that's true, and that's the risk I guess they're willing to take, and we'll see where that gets them. Like I said, I'm still catching up in my back library, so I'm hoping to find some of those diamonds in the rough.
7-Eleven seems to be just grasping at straws now. It's like, all right, we want to get the gamers, and we want to get the alcoholics, because now they've also started their own beer. Have you heard that?
I did. And not only that, they also have the movie industry. So, you know, every time a big hit comes out, you can go get your special slushy cop and whatever. So there's giant whores. They're kind of like the retail version of the Big Ball Broadcast, so I really can't crack on them for that.
I understand. It's like you get your Happy Meal tie into a Disney movie. You can walk into 7-Eleven now and get those really kick-ass Iron Man 2 cups that look like Academy Award figures that have a big straw on the back of them. But, you know, whatever sells. Get those collectible cups. Keep it going. Meanwhile, from Toon Zone, this is some interesting stuff, and it is actually not too shocking because these guys are no stranger to controversy. South Park in hot water from a Muslim group. The Hollywood Reporter is reporting that a U.S. Muslim group issued death threats to South Park creators Trey Parker and Matt Stone over last week's 200th episode where the Prophet Muhammad was depicted in a bear outfit. The threat was posted on the website revolutionmuslim.com, which has been taken down after what site owners described as a traffic overload. The site had posted a link to a news article with details of a mansion in Colorado that the two men reportedly own, as well as the offices of Comedy Central and South Park's production office. The site also used a graphic photo of slain Dutch filmmaker Theo van Gogh, warning Stone and Parker that they will probably wind up like Theo van Gogh for airing this show, unquote. The Hollywood Reporter is stating that the 201st episode of South Park, which continued the storyline of the 200th episode, was censored by Comedy Central as a result of Revolution Muslim's death threats, replacing Muhammad with Santa Claus in a bear suit and censoring other mentions of Muhammad in the episode. According to The Hollywood Reporter, quote, some of the changes came at the behest of Stone and Parker. Others were decisions coming from Comedy Central's standards department, quote. While CNN quotes a Comedy Central representative as saying Comedy Central was responsible for the bleeps and not showing Muhammad in last night's episode. The episode is also currently unavailable at the SouthParkStudios.com website, replaced with a message stating, we do not have network approval to stream our original version of the show. So, interesting. I don't know if death threats came into play with Scientology or the Jonas Brothers or the Catholic Church or you know, there is nothing sacred in the South Park universe. And I almost have to wonder if Trey Parker and Matt Stone ever thought to themselves that it makes perfect sense that you're going to get radical extremists on your case and issue death threats if you're going to do that sort of thing.
I don't find it shocking or interesting in the least because it's not news. This happened already. This happened before with South Park, with wanting to show Muhammad, with Comedy Central censoring it before it hit the air, and people got upset, and it's old hat. It's been done. It's not new. So, okay, you're doing it again to spike your ratings last time. You're in season, 14 now? Is this what it's going to take to get people to tune in? Because, ooh, you're controversial. You've always been controversial. I don't know. Although, I don't want to come off sounding like it's totally horrible, but I guess if you're getting threats from radical jihadists, you kind of take it seriously. At least it's got the perception that it could actually happen. You know, if you get a letter from any Christian group, you can kind of shrug it off nonchalantly when people are posting your home and your place of work with a picture of a slain filmmaker. It's a pretty credible threat. I can see them saying, oh, well, okay, maybe this is a bad idea. Maybe we need to pull back. We've been pushing it for a long time, and it's kind of a breaking point somewhere when realistically somebody can just go and off you.
Yeah, you have to wonder because, you know, put yourself in their shoes, either Trey Parker, Matt Stone, or Comedy Central. It's like, all right, do we inhibit their right to freedom of speech? Or do we kind of protect our ass and their ass? Literally, it's like we don't want people to die for the sake of comedy.
I don't know. Where's the line? If you get enough viewers, I guess you die happy. I kid. I don't know. In this day and age, there's a line. As the Geico guy learned, you know, you can't have an opinion. You can't be controversial, but you have to know where that line is because I'm not saying I agree with the philosophy, but if something did happen to them or the network, it's almost justified when you put it out there like that.
And if they chose to put it in uncensored form in another format, you know, home video, on the website, the death threats would still come. So that doesn't seem to really be an answer either.
No, because probably more so. If you actually go through with something that already gets you in hot water with the censoring, then yeah. And this started last week when Muhammad was inside a mascot costume when they had him dressed up as a big teddy bear. When you know people take religion that seriously and you deitize an individual, it's really sensitive. It's really sensitive. And not being part of or understanding that culture, pleading that type of ignorance really can't, you know, get you out of that hot water.
Yeah. And we're talking about, you know, radical extremists, not Muslims in general, but the extremist side of that Muslim faith that, you know, these people aren't afraid to die. They're not afraid to take people out for whatever cause. So if you're going to make fun of their God, then wow, that's playing with fire in more ways than one, I imagine.
It is. And again, I really don't know how sympathetic society will be to that, or if it'll spur more, you know, anger and hatred and the things that make the world go round.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go. We got a couple of Facebook stories here. Steve, why don't you tell us about that?
This is a great story about a teen who sued his mom for hacking his Facebook account. And suing your parents isn't just with celebrities anymore. A 16-year-old Arkansas boy is suing his mother for hacking into his Facebook account and allegedly posting slanderous remarks. KATV reports that Denise New of Arkadelphia is facing harassment charges from a 16-year-old. Her son, who lives with his grandmother, is also requesting a no-contact order. Prior to the issue, New and her son reportedly had a, quote, great relationship, despite the living arrangements. According to the boy, his mother hacked onto his Facebook and email accounts, then changed both passwords. She also allegedly posted remarks that involved slander and information about his personal life. New admits to changing the password, but denies hacking. She claims he left the account open on her computer. She also admits to making, quote, maybe three, maybe four actual postings, but says the rest was a conversation between her, her son, and his friends. New reportedly hacked her son's Facebook account because she was disgruntled with the things he was posting, including a post that suggested he had driven home one night at 95 miles an hour because he was upset with a girl. New plans on fighting the charges and believes she was fully within her legal rights as a parent to monitor her son's online behavior. Oh yeah, I'm going to fight it. Even if I have to go higher up, I'm going to. I'm not going to let this rest. I think this could be a precedent-setting moment for parents, she told KATV. Prosecutors approved the harassment charges on March 26th, and New faces a court date of May 12th. Prosecutors declined to comment on the case because the boy's status is a minor, but did make a statement saying that New's alleged statement justified the charge. And, I don't know. You could probably speak a lot more to this than I can, Kyle, because I know, you know, when your kids get older, they want to latch on to the social media, the thing all the hip kids are doing, and parents have to be very proactive about how that information is protected, how it's safeguarded, what gets out there. At the same time, does it give you as a parent the right to go onto an email account and read emails and change a password, or go onto Facebook and lock your kid out? You know, nobody's really written a program or an access code to give parents a button to say, okay, if your kid screws up, you hit this. The social media doesn't even know how to handle it and lays that responsibility in the lap of the parents. So what do you think about this?
Well, as long as you've got a child, at least 18 or under 18 living in your house, you are responsible for their actions. I think that while there is that area of respecting personal space and privacy and bounds, I mean, if things come into play and you're suspicious of, you know, either criminal behavior or things where you feel your child is endangered, I think it's perfectly fine to step in and you know, do that. I mean, yeah, your kid's going to be pissed off. Why are you snooping on my account? Why are you reading my emails? It's like, well, with just cause. And this is all, you know, that gray area. What defines just cause? Well, again, I'm the parent. I make the rules. I pay the rent. I pay the bills. It's my call. Once you're out of the house, once you're a responsible adult, you know, out and about, do what you want. You know, you're not going to have to answer for anything except your actions.
Yeah, I just with the internet in general, and especially if your workplace involves being online or even using a computer, I think you already understand your right to privacy is gone. And in some cases, I personally feel some people just put way too much out there. So really, an expectation that anything you're doing online is private, the concept in and of itself is already laughable. So I don't think you can really claim a privacy violation when your stuff's out there for the world to see. And I do have to agree, Kyle, with your sentiment that, yeah, as a parent, you're legally responsible for what goes on. If your kid decides to go and take out a classroom in school, a la Columbine, yeah, I would expect the parent to do everything within their power to keep that from happening. rather than saying, well, you know, that's my son's account, that's his profile, and he can do whatever he wants. So I think that that foresight and that action is certainly warranted. And I almost have to say it's a shame more parents aren't doing that, because a lot of stuff that goes on, you see a lot of the warning signs before it happens. So this is probably more of a wake-up call than a potential lawsuit to parents saying, hey, sometimes you're going to get in your kid's ass to make sure they're doing the right thing, because the consequences could be dire.
I don't know. This, it sounds like another lawsuit that's going to be considered frivolous and thrown out. It's like, oh, I want to divorce my parents. What? Right? Remember that movie in the 80s with Drew Barrymore?
I remember.
Differences or whatever.
Gary Coleman doing it in real life.
Yeah. I divorced my parents. Like, are you serious? Really? These people that raised you, that wanted to look after you? Okay, maybe not child stars so much. Maybe they wanted to exploit them.
Right. But yeah, by the time you're 14, your account's drained, you kind of get some issues.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of on mom's side here. If I see posts here about my child says, oh, I drove 95 miles an hour because I'm pissed off at so-and-so. Like, what? Really? Well, so you're stupid enough to post that knowing that I have access to your feed anyway on Facebook. Wow.
And Facebook's been notorious for that. It's become its own subculture where people are taking people's posts and thankfully blurring out their names and putting the nonsense about, you know, I read one a couple weeks ago. This girl's like, oh, first time with a guy on a beach. And then the first reply is from her dad. And it's like, really? You didn't know who's on your friend list? You didn't think about that before talking about having, you know, casual sex with a stranger for the world to see?
Yeah, posting your drunken puke fest photos up. Check out, I had a great time. Woo! And then, oh, mom and dad called you on. Oops.
It's going to be great if you have a house party and take pictures, put them up on Facebook.
Oh, God. You also you have a story about another Facebook story about the control over your personal information.
You know, it's like we can't go a week without talking about Facebook and the way they're changing their privacy scheme. But once upon a time, Facebook could be used simply to share your interest and information with a select small community of your own choosing. As Facebook's policy once promised, quote, no personal information that you submit to Facebook will be available to any other user on the website who does not belong to at least one of the groups specified by you in your privacy settings. And now times have changed. Today, which was Monday, I believe, Facebook removed its users' ability to control who can see their own interests and personal information. Certain parts of users' profiles, including your current city, hometown, education, and work, and the likes and interests, will now be transformed into connections, meaning they will be shared publicly. And if you don't want these parts of your profile to be made public, your only option is to delete them. This example Facebook uses in this announcement is a page for cooking. Previously, you could list cooking as an activity you liked on your profile, but now your name will become added to any formal cooking page. Under the old system, you could become a fan of cooking if you wanted, but now new cooking pages will publicly display all of the millions of people who list cooking as an activity. I'm just going to stop there because I'm already aghast. Like, we just went through this a couple weeks ago with Facebook changing their privacy settings and having it happen automatically and you having to opt out and a lot of people not knowing how to opt out. And now to take it to a level where this information is going to be displayed unless you go into your account and delete that information, which means nobody, your friends that you mutually agreed to friend on Facebook, won't be able to see that information. So your birthday, where you work, where you live, that you have to actually go in and manually delete that all to keep that off of millions of computers with people seeing this stuff come up with the interest. So again, I understand why Facebook is doing it. Facebook needs to get as many page views as possible in order to make revenue because they're apparently not pouring in enough ad revenue and they're not charging you to be on Facebook. So I understand the corporate greed angle there saying we need more page displays, we need more ad revenue. But when they're just blatantly taking people's private information, throwing it out there for the world to see, and because they're so prolific, it's one of those things where are people going to mass migrate away from Facebook and say, this is the final straw when you're taking my privacy to that level and you're putting it out there? I'm going to leave and go join some other startup. My fear is that's not going to happen because it becomes so entrenched and so integrated in different parts of the web and the phone and people's TVs and everything. I don't see it going away anytime soon. And to me, that's the scarier aspect. Will people sacrifice their privacy to be trendy?
People aren't going to go anywhere unless they do it en masse. You know, they do it like they did when everyone used to be on MySpace, and then they migrated over to Facebook, and then I predict there'll be something else another year or two from now that everyone else will just cross the boat on. And then not a minute sooner, not a minute later. So we can sit here and bitch about the privacy aspect of it and what they did wrong, and every time they redesign a page, and oh my God, how dare they try to monetize and stick ads in my page and this, that, and the other. But they're going to do what they're going to do, and you know, are you going to leave all your friends and family and all your connections online just because you're pissed off at the website? I mean, you can, but unless everyone does it, I don't think the system is going to change.
And again, that's my fear. That's my concern. How much will you sacrifice about your personal information to remain hip and trendy and be on Facebook? Will there be an outcry? Will people say, no, that's the breaking point. We need to leave? At this point in the game, I don't know. And to hear you say maybe in a year, maybe in two, people will find a new place to migrate over to, I certainly hope it doesn't take that long. I hope it's a lot quicker than that, the rate Facebook's throwing your information out there.
Yeah. I mean, between that and Twitter, you know, they're trying to monetize too by sticking ads in your own feed on Twitter. How annoying is that? You know, unless you're a celeb and, you know, you get paid to have ads tweeted, blah, 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 blah.
And promoted tweets and it's a monetization game. It's kind of like geotagging. And again, I'm not attacking anybody by that, but businesses love this. It's Kyle Hebert. He's a celebrity, and he had dinner at Del Taco. Oh well, if Kyle does it because he's hip and trendy, I'm going to go to Del Taco. And that's great for business. That's awesome. And I understand nobody's putting a gun to your head and nobody's making you do it. But it's the monetization factor that makes this all work. Of course, everybody wants to make a buck, and they're going to do everything in their power to make a buck. But again, I argue, at what price beyond the financial? How much do I have to give up to be hip and trendy and do what everybody else is doing while making some elitist corporation bazillion dollars?
Well, moving on. Left 4 Dead 2, very, very popular zombie shooter game, got its very first dose of downloadable content this week called The Passing. Now, it's free for PC users, and it's 560 Microsoft points on Xbox Live, which is about $7. Now, on this content, you get the original Left 4 Dead cast, along with three new maps, a couple new weapons, a new zombie type, and achievement points. Sounds awesome, right? Well, yeah, and no. I know we've talked about it lots of times before. If we paid $60 for a game, give us downloadable content for free. But I guess you got Microsoft, you know, wanting to make a buck here and there. And I guess you don't have to deal with that that big conglomeration sticking its nose in your business once you own the game on the PC side of things. But, I mean, in my opinion, I think Xbox Live is a lot more popular than PC gaming.
There's probably numbers to back that up, too. You know, we talk all the time there. Everybody is on the 360. Everybody's on Live. So much so that it becomes a struggle when you go out to pick up a game and say, do I get it for the PS3 or do I get it for the 360? Well, everybody's on the 360, so of course I'm going to pick it up for the 360. I don't know. Left 4 Dead, it's another BioShock is going to be around forever. They're going to keep pumping it down your throat. If you don't like this iteration, hey, don't deal with it. Don't even get too deep into it. Give it 6 months and another one will come out. And if that rocks your balls, then you pick it up then. It's just the Halo thing. You know, people are complaining, oh, this wasn't what I expected it to be. Hey, wait 6 months. It'll hopefully be what you want it to be. It's Final Fantasy. It's everything else with longevity. It's going to keep coming out, so you're going to bitch and whine about how you don't like particular things, about how they're taking care of it right now. Don't worry. There's going to be a lot more coming. So maybe something will pique your interest.
Yeah, because, you know, PSN continues to be free, but everyone's on the paid service. Xbox Live is, you know, $50 a year. Maybe you can get an extra month or two if you can find a card at the store or whatnot. But that's what sells. You know, people buy the points. And yeah, I mean, like all Star Wars fans who bitch and moan about it, and the people who Dragon Ball fans who bitch about all the iterations that keep coming out, they keep buying them. So there's no incentive for Microsoft to stop charging when they're making money. You know, if you were in their shoes, what would you do? It's like, well, I know I can make money off Call of Duty in the latest map pack. I know I can sell a billion, or, you know, some a ludicrous number of Left 4 Dead, because that's a best-selling title. Of course someone's going to latch on to it.
And it's, I don't know, I take a little bit of pleasure when I read these really bad reviews and they start off with, when I bought this game, I was expecting, or when I came home with this game, blah, blah, blah. And it's, yeah, you still bought that game. At the end of the day, you still bought it. What are you going to do with it now? You put it on eBay and go to GameStop, but you bought it. You're a statistic. You're a cog in the wheel. You're a dollar sign in their pocket. Yeah, life goes on.
And if you've got your little core group of friends that you play with online, and, you know, they're saying, hey, I want to play Left 4 Dead tonight. I got the new map pack. And then you're saying, oh, sorry, I don't have it. And then, oh, you're not like the cool kids. You gotta cough up money like they did so you can, you know, continue to enjoy your social circle.
I had to do that with friggin' Halo. Okay, I was playing Halo. Oh, you're playing on the new map packs. I never play online with you, and then the one time I do, I was like, oh, what's this going to cost me now?
There's more crap. God.
But it works, you know. I'm living proof. It works. If that's what it takes, then, you know, so be it. I think the people who make the map packs get off a lot easier than, like, say, God of War 3, for example, where you have your interchangeable costumes and different attributes. It's still a single-player game. Put a game up on a vast network, and now look, fun for the whole family. So something all you and all your friends could participate in. You do. You feel like Kenny on South Park when everybody else is going to the amusement park, and you're sitting back kicking it poor. It's like, oh, I want to be a part of it. So how much? Oh, okay. You're paying for friendship online. In the end, it's kind of sad.
Yeah. We're plumb out of content. Oh my God. Yet another Big Ball podcast is in the can, but we did tease that we had a very special announcement. Very special announcement. And would you like to actually give the announcement, Steve?
I will. You know, it's funny. I actually forgot about that because the show was so epic. But yeah, big announcement for next week. You definitely want to set your clock, set your reminder on your phones. Be here 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, where Kyle is. We're going to have on iShine. And when I say iShine, I mean, yes, all of iShine. All participating members on iShine are going to be here. It's going to be epic. Mark's going to be pulling the last of his hairs out of his head, trying to get this giant six-way Skype call going and streaming live for your enjoyment. But the entire group of iShine on here, they got great stuff to talk about, and I think we have some very interesting questions to ask them. So if you guys are a fan of their music, or if you're a fan of Johnny, I don't know why, but come check it out. It's certainly going to be a Big Ball broadcast you won't forget soon.
Thank you to everyone in our chat who's come by, including Aaron, Axumwide, Bebop, Chase Chan, Karami, Ed Elric, Golden Panther, Gray Fox, Hero Kid, Queen Lol the Banhammer, RAR16, Saigoto, Saito, Sanji is Cool, Sin, Sloth, Speedy D, The Golden Ninja, Trunks, Chica, and Zell, and everyone else who's been in and out, and everyone else who visited us on iTunes and our website. Stay tuned for the credits for all that good stuff. Thanks to our behind-the-scenes guru, Mark the Engineer, for keeping us online, keeping us edited, keeping us sound as professional and good and all that stuff. Till next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Check out the BigBaldBroadcast.com, the central hub for all the geeky news that you can use. There you can listen to new episodes, go back through the archives, and view our latest Twitter news. You can send your mail and MP3 comments to mail@thebigballsbroadcast.com. Subscribe now via iTunes, Zoom Marketplace, or your favorite RSS aggregator to have episodes downloaded automatically. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Music provided by DJ Unicron and Zero Reynolds.